listening to Dialogue from Illinois Soul. I'm Reginald Hardwick, Illinois Public Media News and Public Affairs Director. Dialogue is an exchange about culture straight from the soul. A celebration of African American music history took place Sunday, September 28th, at Skelton Park in Champaign. IPM's Juliana Means has more about the unveiling of a tribute wall honoring 94 black artists dating back to the 1890s.
An installation celebrating local jazz, hip-hop, and gospel artists was revealed in an event featuring performances by some of the artists featured on the wall. Robert White, trail manager for Champaign County African American Heritage Trail, says it took a year to complete the project.
We wanted to do more than just talk about it. We wanted something that will be here for a lifetime and impact the community from the younger generation to old.
This tribute wall is part of a bigger project of the Heritage Trail, which now has over 24 trail markers in Champaign-Urbana, all of which aim to educate people about largely unrecognized histories. I'm Juliana Means, IPM News.
If you buy beef, no doubt you've noticed that it's gotten more expensive lately. In fact, beef prices in the U.S. are the highest they've ever been, at an average of $9.69 per pound, according to the USDA. So when might they come down again? Harvest Public Media's Michael Marks tried to find out.
The Barton Creek Farmers Market pops up on Saturdays in a shopping mall parking lot high on a hill in Austin, Texas. Richardson Farms' booth is tucked into the far back corner.
We raise beef, we raise pork, we do eggs and chicken, we have milk and we have cheese that we make.
That's Jim Richardson, who owns the farm. He and I are talking under a tent while his grandson fetches items out of a fort of coolers. His beef products include stew meat, steak, and ground beef. Lately, they've become pricier.
I went up roughly a dollar a pound. My processor went up that much or more, so without kind of keeping up, it erodes your profitability.
Richardson's worked with cattle as a rancher and a veterinarian for more than 50 years, so I asked him about the cost of beef.
Do you have any notion of when prices might come down again?
You know, I don't, and I'd say it's going to be years. It's a real complex issue. And it's not going to remedy quickly.
The big reason why beef prices are so high is that the U.S. cattle herd is really small, the smallest since the 1950s, in fact. Years of drought in cattle country have forced ranchers to sell animals. As the population dwindles, each cow becomes more and more valuable.
So we sell those, and that means then that we don't grow the herd. And that's what the situation we've been in here for a while.
That's Brenda Botel, an agricultural economics professor at the University of Wisconsin River Falls. Despite the costs, she says people are still buying beef.
I'm actually surprised at how resilient beef demand has continued to stay with the very high prices.
At 36 General, a small butcher shop and grocery store in San Marcos, south of Austin, Maddie Bills says that high prices have forced her to pay closer attention than ever before to what ranchers and suppliers charge her.
Checking pricing quarterly because things are fluctuating right. Has been really important for us surviving it all.
Bills buys pork, lamb, and cuts of beef from local ranchers.
We get ribeye, tenderloin, strip. Denver is a really popular cut of ours, which is a better value, but it's still really marbled and tender.
The shop is crammed with display cases for cheese and proteins, plus coolers along the walls with veggies, sausage, and chicken feet. In the back, workers marinate ribs, cut sheets of butcher paper, and grind black pepper. Bill said she didn't have a good estimate of when beef prices will drop again, but she has noticed that when buying direct from the source, prices don't tend to jump as dramatically.
Prices have definitely increased across the board. I will say that the more local the product, the more insulated it is from price increases. You know, like the further away you get from the source, the more likely you're going to be playing a game of telephone, and somewhere along the line, someone's going to increase the price and not bring it back down.
So at every step along the beef supply chain, the costs add up. And Battelle, the Wisconsin economist, doesn't expect the high prices to come down anytime soon.
When I'm talking year over year, I don't really see that declining at least through 26.
In fact, she believes prices still have room to go up, at least in the short term.
So I think your August, September, October, we'll still see prices increase.
So those planning a late summer barbecue will need a healthy budget if they plan to serve beef. I'm Michael Marks.
On a hot summer day a little over six decades ago, a quarter million people gathered peacefully in Washington, D.C. to demand laws to advance civil rights, to protect voting rights, and to stop employment discrimination. It was there that the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his now famous I Have a Dream speech. King's preparations with his close allies for that pivotal moment are the subject of Chess Jacobs' new play, The American Five. Here's NPR Morning Edition host, Michelle Martin.
Coretta Scott King, Bayard Rustin, Stanley Levison, and Clarence B. Jones.
Actor Roe Boddy plays the role of King. Here he is at Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C. during a rehearsal of a scene where the five are sitting around a dinner table.
That's it. A fresh piece of challah and some collard greens. Woo! That'll make you do the horror to a Negro spiritual baby. Stan, you have to try this.
It's okay, Mrs. King. I'm full. We need to get back to work.
Oh, come on, Stan. Now, this is my house.
Can we just go back there?
Jacobs and Boddy stepped aside from the rehearsal for a few minutes, and we started by talking about how elements of the play are drawn from real life. Jacobs said that in doing his research, he learned that
there's several mentionings of them getting together over dinner, of them even singing together sometimes, different moments where it's referred to that Dr. King actually loved to cook. Mm-hmm. He loved to make smothered greens. He loved to be very hospitable.
So I'm going to turn with you because you're getting ready to go before an audience as Martin Luther King Jr., who's only one of the most famous people in modern history, and certainly at least among many segments of the American population, one of the most revered. No pressure at all.
Yeah, none at all.
But what drew you to this role, and what are you exploring in it that is interesting to you as an actor?
Well, I've had the privilege of playing Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. four times now. And for some reason, he just keeps coming back into my life. And
you think it's your voice?
I think it's my height, it's my voice, you know. And so I've got that in my favor. But, you know, it's a privilege. I'm not interested in doing an imitation. I'm interested in working from the inside out and bringing the humanity of who he was and the essence.
Is it ever intimidating?
No, it's not intimidating because we all have our idea of who he was. I had my idea of who he was. And what's beautiful about what Chester's written is that it breaks all of those preconceived notions and the cost to be the boss, you know, and there's a lot, you know, he suffered from depression and and morbidity. So I think it's important for people to see the struggles that he faced with trying to get civil rights.
Why do you think that's important?
I think that it's important for us to see great people as human and bring them down so that we can say, oh, this great person who was flawed, like anybody else, can do great things. Maybe so can I.
Just a similar question for you is, I mean, the speech is certainly well known.
Yeah.
There are Martin Luther King, there are I Have a Dream speech contests like all over the country.
Yeah.
What is it that you wanted to bring to the story that you feel adds to what people think they know?
Well, you know, there's history and then there's hidden history. And so when you go and look back and see that someone like Bayard Rustin, you know, was out and publicly gay in the 1950s and 60s, had been convicted of charges and still persevering and found the wherewithal to keep going. That's pretty much the reason why. It's like,
Or Stanley Levison, who was under surveillance
His entire life and then decided that he was going to work for Dr. King behind the radar, right? Like, for me, I really respect these people because of the well of resilience that they had. But doing that on top of all of the very human things we go through at home and still finding the 35 hours in a day to work and advocate for and stand up civil rights for the nation, for me, speaks volumes, right? So that in today's time, when we feel like we don't have the 30 minutes to go out and advocate, that we recognize that it took this level of commitment to have the rights that we have today. And that's something I don't take lightly.
Is that what you wanted to get out of it in a way to sort of motivate people to think about the present moment?
I have a canvas of hopes for what people get out of this show. For me, is to see the different kinds of people from the different places in America that it took for this kind of work to be possible, right? And I think this idea of the five, what we have is a queer man, we have a wealthy Black man, we have a woman who was a sharecropper, we have Dr. King who grew up in a low-income preaching family.
We have a woman who has dreams of her own.
And a woman who has dreams of her own who had 2 degrees.
Who was able who had a time when a lot of women didn't go to college,
yes.
But who had 2 degrees and who was clearly a presence in her own right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, 1963 was a landmark year. It was also a very traumatic and violent year. Mm-hmm. A couple months before the March on Washington, the civil rights activist, the NAACP's first field secretary in Mississippi, was gunned down in his own driveway in Jackson, Mississippi. Just a month later, after the march, the 16th Street Baptist Church was bombed in Birmingham, killing the four little girls. And then a few months after that, President John F. Kennedy was assassinated. And I'm just wondering how you take people to that time.
I'm always considering the fact that because I'm here dancing in a gay bar with my friends who represent the mosaic of the world, somebody did die so that I could do this, right? Somebody got hosed down. Somebody ran away from a plantation. All of these things happened in order for me to be in this room right now.
Before we let you go, we're speaking with you at Forge Theater.
Yes.
It is here that President Lincoln was assassinated. Mm-hmm. The March on Washington was actually planned to coincide with the centennial of Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. So I wanted to ask, what's the significance of the fact that this play will be performed here?
Well, for me, just being here where, the great emancipator was, and I couldn't think of a better time to be doing a history play. And to have this play be done, just a few feet from where that event took place, and to have the spirits of all these giants in there, including him, once we get in there.
Yes.
I hope it shifts the air a little bit.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why this show is called The American Five, because these are people who fought for rights of Americans in very broad and daring ways.
Mm-hmm. That is playwright Chess Jacobs and actor Roe Boddy, who plays Martin Luther King Jr. in Jacobs' new play, The American Five. It runs through October 12th at Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C. Chess Jacob, Roe Boddy, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you
for having us.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Former astronaut Jose Hernandez visited the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign on Thursday to share his story of perseverance. Adrian Reitz has more.
It's okay to dream big.
Jose Hernandez says his dream was conceived as he watched the Apollo 17 moon landing in 1972.
I said, I want to be that guy. I want to be an astronaut.
He's a Mexican-American migrant farm worker turned astronaut. This, of course, was no easy feat. Hernandez was rejected from NASA 11 times before finally being accepted into the astronaut training program. His story is inspiring to many, including U of I junior David Olaya.
My dream as a kid was to be an astronaut as well. It's a hobby of mine to reminisce on those dreams and those aspirations.
Hernandez's story also resonated with Olaya because...
I'm an immigrant myself. I was born and raised in Colombia. I came at the age of 15 to the U.S. and seeing Jose Hernandez, what a privilege.
In 2009, Hernandez was aboard the International Space Station for nearly 14 days. I'm Adrian Reitz, IPM News.
When the moon comes out and the weather is nice, a group of cyclists in Champaign-Urbana get excited. They gather at sunset to go for a ride through the prairie, 22 miles with a break for ice cream. And they've been doing this for over a decade. IPM's Arjun Dhakar takes us along for a moonlight bike ride.
I ride out to Meadowbrook Park in Urbana to meet Gene Grass. He's an avid cyclist and a former president of the Prairie Cycle Club. He rolls up to me on a custom bike he got from Arizona. He's been biking since he was around 5 and says it's just part of his DNA now.
I enjoy getting up early, going out and being in the country. Doing a north-south route, seeing the sun come up among the corn tassels and seeing the light flickering, seeing the shine off of the soybean fields. Hearing the birds, seeing the blackbirds, sometimes seeing goats and llamas out there at people's farms.
The Moonlight Ride is one way Grass gets out to enjoy the open road. Since 2012, he and other cyclists have been riding out to the Sydney Dairy Barn and back in the warmer months on nights with the full moon. Grass says that distance doesn't stop riders of all kinds of skill levels from coming together.
We have 8-year-olds, we have 80-year-olds, we have people bringing their small babies, you know, a couple of years old in trailers. And so it's a family event is what this is.
And Grass says it's a great way to get in touch with nature.
Sometimes during the summer when the moon is high and the moon is bright on a clear night, we will sometimes turn off our headlights. And, you know, if you see a car coming, because we're on the county roads, there's rarely anybody, and see your shadow on the ground. Eyes adjust, see everything out there. It's beautiful.
As we're talking, a few dozen riders start to gather and mingle. I catch up with Eli Harris, a freshman at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He says biking is the main way he gets around campus, and he and his friends have started exploring other parts of town.
Well, I just want to see how far I can go, you know? Like, I've never really done this before. The other day we went on a bike ride, it was probably like 10, 15 miles, and it was fun, so see if I can keep up, I guess.
It's Emily Wood's first time on the ride, too. The last time she was biking regularly was about a decade ago in college. Someone driving a car hit her and broke her arm.
So I've been a little bit nervous to get back on and ride through town, but it's been really nice in Urbana because there are so many like designated places to ride, and so yeah. It feels pretty safe for the most part. So.
And just a moment later, we're off. We pass by U of I cattle farms, and some riders try and hold their breath until we're far away from the smell of manure. Before we know it, we're quickly flanked by cornfields on one side and soybean crops on the other. Even though we're pedaling hard, it's oddly peaceful. You can hear the crickets chirping and gravel crunching under our tires. There are barely any car drivers passing by us, but when they do, they're pretty courteous and give us plenty of space. As we're riding, the moon comes into sight above the horizon. It feels like it's only been a few minutes when we pull up to the dairy barn. Reinhard Wilson and his friend have already got their order in, a caramel crunch sundae. He tells me that he used to ride around Chicago and usually goes biking by himself, but he's enjoyed cycling with a group.
Pool of people, some people from all different walks of life, and we have one passion, and that's bicycling, and then it might go conversation to different stuff that's going on in our lives and whatnot, and I just like how it brings together the community. So I really love it, and just I'm now exercise friendly and, you know, want to be thinking health is wealth, you know, and think about being here for the future for my family and my son.
While I'm waiting in line, I chat with Yerlik Zharalgapov. He's a landscape architecture grad student from Kazakhstan. He says there was a lot to admire along the journey.
But this moment of riding along the trail, there's something to it. I think everyone should try it. I mean, it's like something. I think when you bike, you connect with nature, but when you drive, it's like you're separated from it. But it's something, this was so cool. Yeah.
The ride is also educational for some. I bump back into Eli Harris, who's learned a lesson about the importance of bike lights.
I didn't realize there was like things you had to do to make your bike legal. Like, I don't have a blinker or a helmet.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I'm not actually sure if those were like real rules or not, or they do it for safety.
He's not wrong. Under Illinois' rules of the road, cyclists need to have front lights on after dark and either a reflector or rear lights as well.
I was just told, like, because on campus, like, there's bike paths, so it's like fine. So I might need to invest in something like that so I don't get arrested.
Now you know, so.
Yeah.
By the time I get a small cup of ice cream for myself, much of the group is getting ready to head back. I wolf down my order and hop back on my bike.
You mind if I ride with you all?
Yeah.
It's dark by now, so we turn on our lights and, with caution, start pedaling. On the way to Sydney, the sun was setting behind us. Now the moon is shining on our backs. Jeff Yockey with the group Champaign County Bikes points something else out.
Hey, Trevor?
Yeah.
That's where we're going.
Where the bright lights are.
Oh, wow.
You just can't miss it.
You can see Champaign Urbana in the distance.
You don't recognize it soon.
And sure enough, when there aren't any vehicles nearby, we turn our lights off and see our shadows in the thick moonlight. I'm Arjun Tucker, IPM News.
That's it for this show. Dialogue is produced by Kennedy Vincent and me, Reginald Hardwick. Lamont Holden composed our theme. Dialogue and Illinois Soul are part of Illinois Public Media, a service of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We'll dialogue with you again next week.